Hey y'all, and welcome back. This is another episode of Tales of the Resistance, your favorite podcast about antimicrobial resistance. I'm Mara. I'm the project manager with the I Am Responsible Project and one of the regular hosts of this series. I'm joined, as always, by the marvelous Amber Patterson.
Well, thank you. Hi, I'm Amber. I'm the multimedia graphics designer for the Schmidt Lab, and I work with the I Am Responsible team, and I'm excited to be here.
Excited to have you, as always, and we're going to be joined on the podcast today by our returning and frequent guest, Noelle.
Hello, my name is Noelle, and it's good to be back.
And new on this series, we're bringing in one of the new team members who's been with us this summer working on social media outreach, so you've probably seen some of the stuff she's written. Say hello to Beth.
Hi, I'm Beth, and I'm excited to be back.
And we're going to be continuing our series, answering questions that you guys have submitted via social media. Keep bringing those questions in either on one of our social media pages or with the new website that we finally got going, iamrproject.com. Check it out. All right, let's get into the questions today. What do we got up first?
What side effects do antibiotics have for people when the bacteria are resistant to antibiotics, but people still take them? That's interesting. I don't know the answer to that, so I'll have to defer to you.
I'm not sure, just like you, Amber. But my first thought was that none have specific resistance to bacteria, since all antibiotics can come with side effects. Because they're targeting, like we've talked about, they're targeting all bacteria in the body, and most of the bacteria is good. So the antibiotics might kill the good bacteria in our guts that help our digestive systems.
Yeah, so you're kind of getting at, and I think that's, you're making a good point in the fact that taking an antibiotic when you don't need one, or if, I should say, if you take an antibiotic, and what you're trying to defeat is resistant, what is the side effects? One of the side effects is, well, if you took a broad spectrum antibiotic that kills a lot of bacteria, so it's not super targeted, then you've effectively killed a lot of bacteria that didn't need to die because that particular antibiotic wasn't effective against the pathogen you were trying to kill anyway. So I think that's where you're going with that. And that is, that would be probably my first thought as well, is the microbiome impacts. But the other thing I think we should keep in mind is that antibiotics, they're chemicals. Yes, they're organic chemicals in most cases, but some people are going to have an allergic reaction to them, which can be quite dangerous. Although oftentimes you know that ahead of time, you do not always. And some of them are quite toxic in and of themselves. So, you know, especially as you get into the ones that are used to as alternatives for resistant strands, some of those kind of antibiotics can have very serious side effects for like how organ function or the long-term health of the microbiome. It's really hard to recover. And so there are side effects there. Other thoughts on that?
So I had a misconception about antibiotics that I, just to clarify. So I thought that antibiotics targeted all bacteria in your body, but it's sounding like from what you're explaining that antibiotics are more targeted to a certain area that where the illness is happening. So bacteria, good bacteria that aren't targeted are usually all right. They're not really affected by the antibiotic.
No. And because I know, I don't mean targeted locationally. I mean like targeted as in, well, we call it spectrum. I don't know, Noelle, if you have better explanation of this, but it has to do with the mechanism that some work on some bacteria, maybe because bacteria have some differences within their species that make them more or less susceptible to the mechanism of a specific antibiotic naturally. And that's not considered resistance because it's not a mutation. It's just a natural difference in their species that makes them So you need different kinds of antibiotics to fight different types of bacteria. And that means that there isn't any, well, I don't want to say that there's none because, again, outside of my area of expertise, but I don't think that there are antibiotics that would really basically kill everything. But there are some that have what they're called broad spectrum that will kill a lot of things.
I thought it would increase resistance to antibiotics of a similar subclass.
No, that's a good point because we talked about it killing a bunch of helpful bacteria, but we didn't mention the potential to select for resistance in those other bacteria too.
Yeah. So like, say you've been prescribed an antibiotic, say one kind of tetracycline, that is mostly in animals, I don't think, and humans too. So tetracycline, you've been prescribed a form of tetracycline and it doesn't work. And then you go to your doctor and they give you something that is super close to tetracycline. And because you kept taking your tetracycline that did not work before, that means that if you start taking this new prescription, there may be chances that it will not work as well.
So basically, let's say you had an illness a few months ago where you had strep or something and they prescribed you an antibiotic and it turned out that the strep was resistant. You had still taken your antibiotic course all the way through, as you should. We're not making changes in recommendations here. We're just describing a hypothetical, right? You don't want to take advice on a hypothetical, especially on a podcast again. But so you took your course all the way through, but it didn't affect the strep because the strep strain was resistant. But what it did do was it created, selected for resistance in something else that was in your body already because, you know, it was a broad spectrum effect. Yeah, the strep already had resistance, but now that resistance is creating a survival benefit. So the genes are being selected for and getting passed around between the bacteria that are there. Mm-hmm. Well, then you know, some months later, maybe you have some other kind of disease and that would for a different pathogen, but with a similar class of antibiotics, and now you're resistant there too. So anytime we use antibiotics, we're selecting for resistant bacteria. Sometimes they're in the species of interest, the pathogen we're trying to kill. Sometimes they're in something else. And that's one of the reasons why I think we probably all have resistance in us at some point, at some level. But yeah, that's a good point, Noelle. But I do want to emphasize again, for all of these things that we said, what is the side effects of antibiotics, of taking an antibiotic for your body? We don't want to say don't take them. We don't want to say don't take them as prescribed. I think we're just trying to say they are not the totally benign, better safe than sorry approach to disease. There are side effects to taking them if you don't need them. There would be side effects to taking them in this case if it turned out that the antibiotic was resistant. So take antibiotics as prescribed and encourage stewardship.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I do have in all of my notes for most of these questions. I do say that check with your healthcare provider in case your antibiotics do not work, because they can do a screening to figure out what is wrong. Maybe it may be due to poor prescription, lack of prudency, and maybe you may be developing resistance to the antibiotics. And because of that, your healthcare provider can recommend a better course of action. So we're doing this just for knowledge purpose, to help spread the word about AMR and ways we can combat it. We are not experts, but we do have a bit of knowledge in what's going on. But always, disclaimer, check with your healthcare provider.
Yeah. Yeah, we shouldn't definitely just go with, I am the most informed person, more informed than my doctor. I know exactly what to do. So we shouldn't just go with that mentality. I do think that we have, as patients, we can play, you know, how we all have a role in this. And one of our roles could be just being informed of this, so you can always ask your doctor for more information if you're prescribed an antibiotic. Is this, what is this for? And would I be okay with not taking it? Or you could always ask those questions to clarify so that you're practicing good stewardship and of course, taking your antibiotics until the end of the prescription is also something we can do as just the general public.
All right, let's move on to the next question here. Can resistant bacterial infections spread between me and my pets? Hey, Amber, you want to start us off on this one? I know you've been working on a project on this.
Yeah. Well, keeping in line with you and Noelle, the short answer is yes. But I'm not exactly sure exactly how it works, but it's called zoonosis, when you can catch something from your pets or your pets can catch something from you. And there have been studies that have shown that people and pets have had the same strain of resistant bacteria. As far as how exactly that works, I will let you guys talk about that.
I have the same answer, Amber. I was like, yes, yes, and yes. Because I remember we had a seminar session once when I was taking the antimicrobial resistance seminar class, where I think a veterinary doctor came and talked a lot about this. It's that one class that I missed, so I don't know the content of it, but I was hoping Mara can talk more about it.
For our listeners, Noelle is referring to a class that we teach every spring. The I Am Responsible team teaches every spring. One of the many facets of antimicrobial resistance. We've had, each time we've had it taught, a different vet come in and talk about the problems with antimicrobial resistance in companion animals. And we also talk about livestock too, but I think the companion animals one always sticks with people because they are very close to their pets. So if we think about, and I remember in a previous episode, I was talking about how risk becomes higher and higher the closer it is to you. So you have a really good capacity to mitigate your risk by hand washing because it's personal, it's on your body, and it is how you interact with the world, your hands. So it's very close to you, and that's why it's really impactful in reducing risk. In the same way, animals that are close to you, where like a pet, have a higher potential risk factor for transferring antibiotic resistance or any pathogen than an animal like a deer or a cow living out in the environment somewhere far away from you. Now, all of those animals probably have resistance and can trade them back to you. Like Amber said, pets and their owners share a lot of microbiome because they share skin cells are constantly fluffing off one to the other. You're sort of interacting with their waste a lot of times because you're responsible for cleaning up after them.
The occasional kiss.
So you might be exchanging saliva as well. So you have a lot of opportunities to share your microbiome with your pet. And so there's going to be a lot of crossover there. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a resistant infection from them, because again, pets and people are very different in terms of what kind of bacteria will be harmful to each of them. So they're not the same species most of the time, but there are some that are, like Amber said, zoonosis. Zoonotic infections are ones that can be passed, and the same species will make both sick, or at least they're frequently transferred by one species to the other. They may not make your dog or cat sick, but usually that's where you'll get that kind of infection or something like that. So yeah, it's a little bit of a complex thing in the sense that you'll share a lot of resistance with them because you both take antibiotics and then you pass back and forth those resistance genes. But unless you're you get a pathogen elsewhere, you may not necessarily be picking up an infection from them, but you might. I mean, it's a multi-layer thing.
That's good to hear. I had read a few articles about this, and you come away thinking, okay, I have to wash my hands every time I touch my pet. That's not possible. You know, I mean, who's, you know, every time you touch your cat, you got to wash your hands. Who's going to be able to do that? But so it's good to hear that the risks aren't quite as high as you think they are at first glance.
Well, let me backtrack then, because I don't want to give a false impression that. Okay, so I guess I want to say that there is risk in everything, right? And certainly pets are closer to you than other animals, and so there's risk there. But I also don't want to like make people irrationally afraid. Mm-hmm. I do think, like you said, there you can wash your hands. So maybe you not wash your hands after every time you pet your cat, but you certainly should wash your hands before you eat if you have been petting your cat, or just like periodically if you have a pet or animals in the house. Be aware that you're sharing bacteria with them. And, you know, if they're taking an antibiotic, that means their bacteria, their microbiome has probably got resistance in it, heightened levels. If they're outside, they're bringing in a lot of extra pathogen potential because they're interacting with other species in the environment who may be carrying pathogens or antibiotic resistance. So they're definitely a potential vector for a lot of things. So you want to love your pet, but with safety in mind as well. But I guess I'm just trying to balance two things. Like, we should be concerned about antimicrobial resistance, but not terrified. We do have mm-hmm. tools. As long as we all take steps here, we can do this together. Let's not get sort of bubble boy thinking. We don't need to live in bubbles, but we do need to do something. I guess that's maybe where I'm trying to get to.
It reminds me of Carrie Nixon's book, when we just finished reading, Quarantine Life, and how we don't want to be fear mongers. We can't live in constant fear because we're always going to be exposed. So you both want to be aware that you're being exposed, but you also don't, like you said, Mara, you don't want to live your life in constant fear. And we don't want to be projecting, we as the host here, don't want to be projecting that fear-mongering, you can never touch your pet again. And anytime you touch your pet, you have to immediately wash your hands. And, you know, we don't want to be giving that impression of just fear, constant fear in people.
Yeah, I think ultimately the benefit of having pets outweighs the challenges, you know, the potential dangers.
I think, as with anything, we have a lot of, you know, human history to know how we get infected by things. We get infected by things through what we eat, through cuts and scrapes and wounds, sometimes through and through respiratory diseases. And sometimes there are eyes are potential as well, but and sometimes like skin, but that's more like a skin disease. It doesn't so much get in through there. So if you think about those things, your understanding of how diseases can get into your body, and then you're just aware of that in your daily lives, like, okay, so I want to make sure that when I eat, the pet is not involved in any way in what I'm eating. Not just that you're not eating your pet, because nobody's doing that, but that you have cleaned the space that you're eating from and your hands, and the pet is not involved. It's not on the table with you. I would suggest not feeding your pet with your hands and then feeding yourself, so that you're very cognizant, and not just because of pet germs, but because of all the germs in your house. When you're eating, you want to be clean. And the same thing, like when you're doing something with your nose or mouth, you're blowing your nose, or all the stuff in the early COVID about not touching your face because it would get into your mouth, it would get into your eyes, that sort of thing. So all of that same stuff applies. And as long as you're kind of living with those awareness, it's not that you can't, I mean, I work, Noelle worked with some very dirty stuff. We worked in environmental engineering, specifically with animal waste. And I didn't ever get sick from that. It's not that being surrounded by bacteria is necessary, or even very high levels of bacteria, like with municipal waste or with manure, isn't necessarily going to make you sick, as long as you're cognizant of the ways that you could put that bacteria that you're working with. I have been like hands and knees in a pile of manure, not on purpose, but I fell. Okay. So, and I did not get sick from that. So you just know that you have to clean up very well and not eat anything right after. And make sure it doesn't get in your nose and mouth and all that stuff. And the same thing is true for your pets. So having those things in mind, and then you just go through the world. The world is dirty, but not all that dirt that could get around you or touch you even means that you're going to get sick from it. There's specific ways that you get infected. And we kind of know that from experience. And we just got to protect ourselves in those ways.
That's good, putting it into perspective.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the questions we intended to answer in this podcast. We still have more to go, though. So we will be back again soon with more question and answers. And if you have other questions, you know, please reach out on the different social medias and we will get to them as we can and look forward to doing so. So thanks to everyone for joining us, and we will talk again soon.